So, without further ado, hey guys, Caleb here, delivering that episode, one of the episodes that I promised you guys in regards to having a conversation with a friend of mine who's more on the left than I am, and to get in discussion about where we agree and where we disagree. So, Camille, how you doing?
I'm all right. I'm a little stressed just because of school and the pandemic, but I'm all right. How about you?
I'm doing good. I'm really happy we were finally able to coordinate our schedules to make something like this happen. So just to give some people the context, would you give a quick summary on what you know, the core of your beliefs are, I guess, politically, philosophically, what you identify as, I guess, in that realm? Just give people the context to the basis of your positions.
Okay. So, you know, I will be completely transparent. I was not the most political person at the beginning of 2020, but I was not the most political person towards the beginning of really the Trump campaign, I should say is really the catalyst that kind of sprung me into this world of politics. So what I identify as, I would definitely call myself a Democrat and a liberal. However, when it comes to politics, I'm not necessarily hung up on, you know, partisan affiliation. Like, I'm not necessarily, there are certain things that the parties do that I do agree with and I don't agree with on both sides.
Sure.
However, you know, in most scenarios, my voting, and I usually agree with most of the left.
I gotcha. What's an example of something that right does that you agree with? You can think of anything.
Something that right does that I agree with. Let me think.
And if you can't think of anything off the top of your head, that's totally okay. I'm just wondering if you have more context.
Something off the top of my head. I do believe I like the notion that the right defends like moral values and high ground. However, okay. I appreciate, you know, having a political party that is, you know, that says it's dedicated to protecting people's morals. However, what I draw, you know, a problem with that usually occurs on the right is that they are usually pushing their personal morals and not necessarily taking into consideration like the fact that people have different morals, people have and then a lot of times the word morale can bring in like a religion type thing, and that can be an issue.
Gotcha.
Not everybody has the right to the same religion, and then there's the whole separation of church and state. That should be a thing.
Absolutely, you know? Yeah.
So it's like, I agree. I appreciate the right dedication to protecting morality, because I feel like the government should definitely be dedicated to protecting its country's morality. However, sometimes I think they can go about it in the wrong way.
Right. Yeah? No, I think I think you'd raise... As a libertarian, I have that same sentiment when it comes to both of the parties. I find that the left tends to be good on a lot of social issues and personal freedoms that people should be entitled to have. I've always been in favor, you know, of gay marriage, the legalization of many drugs, reforming the criminal justice system. And then the things that the right have been good on is also defending, also personal freedoms, but different personal freedoms. Sometimes they're good on defending Second Amendment rights. Sometimes they're good on defending economic freedom. And it just kind of depends. I don't particularly identify as really right or left, because as a libertarian, my biggest thing is just, I don't believe many of these issues should be resolved at the federal level. And I think we should push more power back to the people and the states to figure things out at localities, with the exception of a few issues that I do think are reserved federally. So I can agree to your sentiment, because I do think that both of the parties, while I think that the people within the parties have good intentions, especially, and I think that at the young level, even some of the representatives do, there's a lot of flaws within the political machine that allows people to put partisanship and personal biases over the progress that may be beneficial to the whole country.
Yes, I agree with everything you just said. Yes,
Okay, cool. Yeah, so we, what's causing us to get it reconnected and have this conversation was I made a comment on a TikTok that you made in regards to the Supreme Court. And I figure since that kind of was like the spawn of us having this conversation, we could get into that so you could maybe explain your perspective a little bit. And then maybe I can explain mine a little better because we were trying to have a text combo, but we both were typing at a million miles per minute. So I want to hear out your position, hear out mine, and we kind of have that discussion, if that's all right.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. So the TikTok is the reason why I used it was so that I could, the reason why I used TikTok was specifically was so that I could use the screen. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing the only reason I keep TikTok on is that green screen feature. And so essentially the TikTok was about the conflict that is going on in the Supreme Court right now that has arisen due to the passing of Court Justice, Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Rest in peace. She was a great woman. And, you know, she tended to fight more towards the left. And so now the issue stands that, okay, well, let me retract. In 2016, we had a very similar situation. The Supreme Court Justice
Anthony Scalia, right?
Yes, yes, him. Is it Antony or Antonin, right. Okay, I was going to say, there's a second N in there, so I wasn't sure. It's a strange name, but Mr. Scalia, he passed. And when that happened at a very crucial time in the country because it was right before an election year like it is now. As you know, the Constitution states that it is the president's constitutional right to elect a Supreme Court justice when one passes. And then after that, you know, there is a process to, you know, hear out the election, determine whether or not they are a good fit, things like that. You know, so, and there's usually a hearing kind of process. And so at that point, the right felt that it was unfair for the president to exercise his constitutional rights simply because it was coming to an election year, and they felt the public should be able to choose who sits on the Supreme Court. And the way they would do that is by electing the president, because at that point, then the president would then, you know, elect the new Supreme Court justice. So that was the argument that was made by the right.
Mitch McConnell and all of them definitely harped on that back in 2016. I remember.
Right. And all of this, exactly. And it was very controversial because at that point, the Supreme Court justice was at a tipping point, I believe, on the majority of whether it was the right or the left.
Hey guys, before you listen to the show, I just want to give you a heads up that somewhere in the 11 to 12 minute range, we had a little bit of technical difficulties and we had to splice that audio. So if you're kind of worried that you might have missed something, it was just us trying to fix that cutout issue that we had. But I think I fixed it up, so hope you guys enjoy the show.
Definitely, they fought. They definitely fought the Republicans on that decision. But Barack Obama was never able to officially nominate Merrick Garland for his justice seat, at least during that point. That seat was then, you know, filled by, I think the man's name is Neil Gorsuch.
Gorsuch?
Yeah.
Okay.
Neil Gorsuch, I believe, is his name. And so now, you know, fast forward 4 years, we're in a similar position, and the right does not want to stand by their decision from 2016 and allow the public to choose who fills the Supreme Court justice seat by choosing the president. And so I just felt the need to, at the very least, inform people of why people are talking about, oh, you know, Justice Ginsburg, she passed. Why is this important? Like, some people didn't really understand why it was so important. They just saw her as, you know, they just saw it as the passing of someone that was important, but it was much more than that. And so my main goal was honestly just to educate people on what was happening and what they could do to possibly affect the situation.
Okay. So, all right. So I'm getting more context. So full disclosure, I know a little bit about the situation, but it's not, in my opinion, Supreme Court to me is just not as relevant on my list of issues for a few reasons. The thing is to me is that the Supreme Court isn't supposed to do much other than keep the other branches of government in check. So when Congress or the Senate pass a law, they're supposed to determine whether that law is constitutional or not. And they can also hear appeals that come from state level. So I've always kind of been confused by the debate over having either a conservative or a liberal court, because as it was intended, it was never meant to be a partisan branch of government. They're supposed to unbiasedly use the process of originalism to determine the laws as they're written and find out if what the government is doing abides by the Constitution. So with that in place, I definitely think it's funny that the Republicans in 2016 said something totally different than they did in 2020, and vice versa. That, you know, now that it's Republicans' turn, they're saying, well, the president has a right to nominate. Although 4 years ago, totally different story.
Right. And just comment on what you were saying about the Supreme Court. I think the fact that the government itself is partisan to me is kind of just like, it seems like it does a lot more harm than good.
100%.
Because it has divided everything.
Like, yes.
And part of it can, like, you know, some of it has to do with racial things, but a lot of it is just petty. Like, it's crazy because and what's really actually unfortunate is we are in a position where the right is not even, in some ways, is not even the same party that it was 2 decades ago, you know? Or, you know, we could, you know, like the right party that your grandfather and your great grandfather, you know, like the people that voted, you know, in the 40s and 50s, like that right wing is very different from the right wing that we have to do now. And it's creating like such a sever. And it's I think a lot of it has to do with just personal greed on both sides.
Okay.
And it's just, I guess it just depends on in which way the greed is, you know, like which way the greed falls. But
yeah.
And so I guess that's why the Supreme Court is biased, excuse me, towards right or left. Because you said, their whole purpose of it is to keep the other branches in check. Well, the right is going to do everything. They're going to work to pass bills that serve the right side and the right.
Mm-hmm.
And the left will work to pass bills that serve their greed. And so that's kind of where the separation lies. It's just, they have greed and that lies in different areas.
Right. I mean, it is definitely a natural byproduct that after so long of the government being broken up into two major parties, eventually that's going to seep into systems that were intended not to be as partisan. You know, George Washington warned against having political parties, and yet here we are.
Right.
So I mean, I see what you're saying. To my point, I think it's less to do, in my opinion, on the personal side of things, and has more to do with the way the system is designed. The thing about democracy, especially when you're putting it on a grand scale of 50 states across all these broad different cultures, you know, 320 million people, and you divide them into two groups, well, what's naturally going to happen is things are going to get very divided very fast. Eventually, personal agendas and party agendas can definitely become part of that cultural mindset where it's like, I am a Republican, therefore I think this, and it kind of turns off free thinking, and people get sucked up into, can be sucked up into you know, the groupthink mentality that I have to abide by whatever the agenda of my party is, which was a big part of the reason why I left, considering myself a Republican, was because, you know, I decided that I care about principles. My principles are personal freedom and, you know, civil liberties. I care about that significantly more than I care about Team Red or Team Blue. So I don't really think that I can fully identify myself as a Republican. That was a big part of why I decided, like I said, to break away from that mindset.
Okay. I was always curious as to what that was, like what it was for you, because when we were in high school, things were different.
Oh yeah, no, I was much more conservative. Well, I was never really conservative, because I was always somewhat a social liberal or social moderate, but I called myself a Republican because I believed that at the time Republicans were the party of small government, lower taxes, and defending those personal freedoms that I cared about, such as the Second Amendment, and protection of the freedom of speech. But as time went on, it became clear that they didn't really care about principles. They nominated Donald Trump, despite Donald Trump being a New York Democrat most of his life. And when, you know, when he got nominated, everybody just kind of fell in line. And the more I did research, because 2016 was the year I really got involved in, this is my first election. So, you know, I was doing research on all the candidates. I was watching all the debates. I was a fan of Rubio and Rand Paul. And, you know, it was at that time where I was just like, Once the Republicans decided Trump was going to be their guy, it kind of broke me down a little bit, because I was like, this guy he's an asshole, like plain and simple. Like, he just doesn't talk the way a leader should. He's kind of embarrassing. And I'm like, how is this guy supposed to be the standard bearer of the party? How is he supposed to be the one that's going to lead us, you know, when he doesn't even know how to conduct himself on the personal level? You know, it appeals to some people, but to me, I thought it was just kind of disgraceful. And it really made me like do a deep think about, what do I value? And my opinions have changed a little since then, you know, and they're constantly changing because I'm discussing things with people of different perspectives. So yeah, but I would like to ask, kind of segueing off of that. So in my opinion, from my perspective, the most important thing for a society to function is the respect for individuals' personal freedoms. And that extends across the board to whatever you can think about, whether it is, you know, freedom of speech, the freedom of assembly, the right to bear arms, whatever you want to name it, the right to a fair trial. I think all those rights are in their own way equally important. I think that is kind of the cornerstone of
liberty and pursuit of happiness as well.
Yeah, exactly. If you want to sum it up in, you know, the Jefferson's words, yeah, that like essentially that life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I'm curious if you've thought about it, what you would say from your philosophy, what the most important aspect to a society functioning.
The most important aspect to a society function. I think I would agree with you that, well, I think the most important thing to a society's functioning is
you're good. Or, I mean,
like,
however,
I know exactly what I'm trying to say in my head, but I'm trying to think of like how to say it.
It's, I got like, you totally. Take your time.
So what I'm thinking in my head is, we need some kind of law and order, but it needs to be like self-correcting. It can't, It cannot be susceptible to any kind of taint or, you know, like poisoning. Mm-hmm. So like, gotcha. we cannot allow one person to have more power than the other. We cannot allow one person's personal bias to decide for another.
I gotcha.
And so I think that goes, like I said, it ties back into your belief that, you know, people should have personal freedoms. And while I agree that that is very important to a society, I think if people are just free to do whatever they want to do, then there's like no limitations to what they can't
do. Well,
you know what I mean? So it's like,
right,
that's why I'm thinking, like, you know, you need to have some kind of like organization to it, if that makes any sense.
Right.
Like, it can't.
Well,
right.
Let's expand on that a little, because the cornerstone of libertarian philosophy is what's something called the non-aggression principle.
Okay.
And what basically that means is that in a society, there has to be an agreement upon those within society to not commit acts of aggression against others' life, liberty, or property. Meaning, you know, don't kill, don't steal, don't rape, basically things like that. If something as an action can be summed up as an act of aggression, it is not allowed in that society and is therefore determined to be a crime. Now, things that are not acts of aggression under a libertarian philosophy, for instance, putting drugs in your own body is kind of a big one. Consensual prostitution is usually another. These types of things are not considered crimes under a libertarian philosophy because these were done by consensual people with their own, you know, with their own bodies. Right. They didn't force anybody to do anything. So there is, to an extent, there is some type of order and structure that kind of keeps my philosophy going in that sense. So I kind of want to expand on what you said about, you know, the law and order aspect and things like that. I agree that for a society to function, there has to be some type of structure, right? Because otherwise it's just a bunch of people living in, you know, living together. And
yeah,
there has to be something that ties them together in order for it to be considered an actual a country, right? So do you, I'm trying to think of how I would like to phrase this. Do you think that a society is better off with deriving its morals from laws or deriving its laws from morals? And I can expand on that if you want.
I understand exactly what you're saying. And so laws on morals or morals on law? Well,
so I mean, I can give you my just quick summary what you think about it, because like, so my opinion is that law in of itself is not moral on its face, right? Mm-hmm. So what I mean by that is that law can be moral and it can be immoral,
mm-hmm.
because it's been, you know, slavery was legal in this country. Mm-hmm. The Holocaust was legal. The treatment of Native Americans was legal. There's been plenty. And currently we could put people in cages for having ounces of marijuana.
Right.
For us to, you know, have a society that functions in a positive way, we have to base our laws off of some type of moral code. Otherwise, what winds up happening is what you kind of referred to earlier, where people's own personal biases and greed can kind of get in the way of society functioning. And then we wind up having people and groups, you know, get power over others and kind of enforcing their will. I think it's always, you know, it's always an aspect of society. There's going to be differences. I tell people sometimes I'm not a fan of equality, and they get really freaked out at me when I say that, but they never let me explain what I'm trying to, when I say.
I definitely get what you're saying though.
Like, yeah.
I get it completely.
Like there's going to be people that have certain advantages and disadvantages, and there's no way to to fix that without severely taking away from other people and redistributing. And even then I'm not sure it's possible. What I think is better as an alternative is kind of level the playing field, but only in a sense that people have the same rights.
So that is exactly the difference between equality and equity.
Right.
Have you ever seen a picture and it's like three different guys trying to look over the wall,
mm-hmm.
but they're three different heights?
Yes.
And so one picture has them all standing on the same size box.
Uh-huh.
And so two, like one guy can very clearly see over the wall, one can barely see, and one can't see at all. But then in the other picture, the boxes are different sizes. So then everybody can equally see over the wall, right?
Mm-hmm.
That is the difference between equality and equity. Equality is making everybody equal. Equity is providing what needs to be provided to each individual person.
Gotcha.
So if, you know, if someone is just naturally more intelligent or stronger, then it would make sense to not necessarily give them as many, you know, resources or privileges or what have you, you know, because they can provide for themselves.
Uh-huh.
That's the difference between equality and equity. And I think that's I think what you were about to say.
Yeah.
I think equity is a great way to like describe what exactly what you were about to say. I'm sorry to cut you off.
No, please. It's supposed to be, you know, a dialogue.
Right. But that is something that we actually learn about in school. Like, I'm in school to be a teacher. And so we learn the importance of teaching with equity as opposed to equality. You can't treat all of your students the exact same way because they don't learn the exact same way. They don't have the exact same life experiences, which determines how children learn.
Mm-hmm.
They don't learn in the exact same learning environment. Some students may speak different languages. Some students might have disabilities. Some might come from different socioeconomic backgrounds. And so all of those things determine how you teach, right?
Absolutely.
And so for a little boy who, you know, has dyslexia and in English is his second language, I'm going to spend more time helping him with the worksheet than, you know, a little girl who, you know, her parents both drive Benzes and she has a tutor at home that helps her. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like, and I think that can definitely be translated into society. There are some people who are just down bad and they need more help than others. And I think that the difference between equality and equity definitely kind of plays a role into some of the differences in the political party.
Sure. Yeah.
You know?
No, I think you definitely raised a lot of good points. I think if we apply this in a more specific sense to certain issues, we might be able to see more about how we disagree with the it being applied in practice. But I think in principle, we kind of see the same issue. So my view is that despite I do agree that some people have advantages over others because of natural limitations. And if we want to have an equitable society and we would like to level the playing field, give people help where it's needed. Where I think we might disagree is I don't believe that the government, especially the federal government, one is very capable of doing that efficiently, or two should be involved in that position. And the reason I say that, I mean, there's a lot we can get into as the basis of that position, but just kind of sum up the core of my belief, it's that I just want a chance for everyone in society to compete, and live their lives as they see fit on a fair level. And I would like us to help each other in society so that we don't need the government doing it, because what winds up happening a lot of times is even when government has the best of intentions, they can wind up screwing things up with things. Like, I'll give you a perfect example. This happened this year. Earlier in the year, the FDA considered banning fruity flavored vape juices, right, and disposable e-cigs. Now, it was only like a partial ban of like certain particular flavors. But what's wound up happening since then is there's been a dramatic increase in the, I'm not sure if you're familiar with like puff bars and disposable vapes, right? So in essence, they tried to do something to curb teen addiction to nicotine and vaping, right? But what they wound up happening is it had an adverse effect that they couldn't have foreseen, where now we have a lot more environmental waste coming from this system because people are getting the disposables and throwing them out at a much higher rate. Whereas, you know, there's a given cost to all these things. And essentially the core of my argument is that when we do – the further decentralized we figure things out, so as we figure them out at the person-to-person level, it's the most efficient. And as you get it closer to, you know, the federal government trying to make decisions for 320 million people, the less efficient it gets. What are your thoughts on that?
I agree that the government, when you try to make, you know, sweeping decisions for a vast number of people, you know, you're bound to mess it up.
Yeah.
Because there's just too many varying, there's just too much diversity, especially when it is a country that was quite literally built on diversity, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, not at first, but we got there.
Right. You know, the premise, but,
we had a lot of immigrants. They were just predominantly white for the first like 50 years or so.
But the idea.
I'm with you. I'm just kind of making easy jabs. I don't, on this show, I have quite a tendency to make fun of, things that some people might not traditionally make fun of. So that's all.
No, I'm here for it. 'Cause yeah, But actually, I'm sorry, that just really made me think of something so funny earlier. I was laughing at, oh my goodness, somebody was talking about why we should not refer to it as Columbus Day and we should refer to it as Indigenous Peoples Day.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, why are we celebrating Columbus? He got lost.
That's very true.
It just made me laugh because I had never heard anyone refer to Christopher Columbus as getting lost. But
that's not technically wrong. I mean,
exactly what happened.
The basis of the position is, without us getting too deep into Columbus, that guy was a murderous, just piece of shit, to sum it up.
Awful.
we're on the same page there, I'm sure.
But to answer your question, it kind of fell out of my head a little bit. Okay, I remember. So, like I said, when you have a government that's making sweeping decisions for this many people, you're right. It is not the most efficient way to go about governing a society.
Mm-hmm.
However, I'm not sure person to person is the most efficient in the sense that you are getting, you know, everyone's, that you are hitting everybody's, you know, dotting all I's and crossing T's. Like satisfying all needs for sure. But I think I would say maybe like state-wise, I think that would be.
I think state-wise is better than our current system of federal thing for sure. Because at least at the state level, if I don't like what my local Congress or my local assemblyman is doing, I can lobby to have dinner with that guy. And it's a part-time position where they're working within the state. It's a lot different than me trying to lobby my congressman who lives in D.C.
Exactly.
So now to clarify, it's not for me to, it's my position is not that everything needs to be dissolved at the person-to-person level and it's a free-for-all. Right. I think, you know, there's going to be an instance, like, here's the thing. If you take my philosophy to its logical extreme in like an anarchism type system where people are at a person-to-person level determining everything, you're still going to have structures that form because people like the convenience sometimes of being part of an organization that makes decisions. Yeah. It's the same reason why some people decide to form businesses and some people decide to just work for other people. It's just people have different interests. So communities would get together and, you know, formulate like, you know, homeowners associations voluntarily. They would get together and form a school board or whatever else it is, a village type government. But the difference is I think that we're better off the closer we can get a system of governance that is based on direct consent and has more accountability. I think then we'll see better solutions than our current system.
Yes. I think, like you said, direct consent and accountability, because a lot of times, you know, the government is, you have people making decisions that, first of all, are not going to live long enough to really see them come to fruition.
And even if they do, they're, you know, they're wealthy enough that they're going to be fine. It doesn't
really apply to them. And then also, they're making decisions that have nothing to do with them. Why are men making laws that have to do with women's reproductive systems, Caleb? That is the most absurd thing to me in the absolute world. If it has it's my body.
Well, let me give you some perspective. I agree. I see you with the basis of your position, and we don't have to get too deep into this issue because it's a bit of a hot topic for people.
Right.
But I will, let me just give you a bit of a devil's advocate. So let me say this. My belief on abortion is kind of complex. I don't really fall too pro-life or too pro-choice. I kind of lean both ways depending on the issue.
Mm-hmm.
And the basis of my position, plain and simply, without giving it too much context, is I would like society to find ways to avoid unwanted pregnancies from happening in the first place so abortion isn't on the table.
Right.
And for when abortion is on the table, that women that get unwanted pregnancies feel comfortable enough to do something other than abort. Now, whatever that entails with all the economics and things, you know, the societal factors that go into it, fixing the abortion system, the adoption system, all that stuff. Great. Let's make birth control over the counter as far as I'm concerned. Let's fix sex education. I agree 100%. And I also agree that, you know, I don't think outlawing abortion is going to be a very effective means of curbing it either.
Because I can just, as a person, I'm sorry, as a young woman, I can tell you that making it illegal is not going to curb anything, if at all.
Right. Yeah.
It is going to increase the number of, like, the amount of pregnancy mortalities, because
absolutely,
because abortions didn't just not exist before they were legal. Right. You had women bleeding out to death in alleys with hangers, like
that, or trying to drink themselves into a coma,
or throwing themselves downstairs, or
100%.
You know, like, so it's so what I personally feel about it is I like to say that I'm firmly pro-choice, and the reason I say this is because I believe that a person should be able to choose whatever they want to do. So that includes, you know, the married woman, you know, who is financially stable and she's ready to start a family. That includes the 14-year-old who was molested. That includes the 22-year-old who had a one-night stand. That includes, you know, just anyone under the sun should be able to have the right to choose what they want to do. If you want to have this child and then put them in the foster system, you know, or the adoption system, that is your right to be able to choose that. If you don't want to have this child, then you should be able to choose it. But I don't think anybody should be able to take away your right to choose what you want to do. Like, should nobody be able to tell you what to do with something as personal as your, and then it's like, and then people, and then you, and then what I really don't appreciate about the people in the pro-life party is how, what's the word? Conditional a lot of people in the pro-life party are. Because some people in the pro-life party were like, well, if it comes down to, you know, if it's a danger to the mother's life, then okay. But if not, then no, I'm not okay with it. Or, well, if it's the result of rape, then I'm okay with it. But if it's not, then, you know, then no. Or depending on, you know, like, I don't appreciate the conditionalism. Like, if you believe, because I remember, I think it was Sarah Palin that said it, she believes in conception at, like, I mean, what is life?
Life begins at conception.
There you go. That's what it is. Life at conception. If you are pro-life, then you need to believe in life at conception. You can't, there should not be any scenario where abortion should be okay with you if you genuinely believe that it is a human being at conception. And,
well, not necessarily, right? Because if you believe that, but the mother's life is at risk to birth, at that point, it's basically murder in the self-defense.
Yeah.
I see what you're saying, though.
But so it's like, why are you making a law to take away a woman's life, like a woman's choice to choose her own life over a creature that she may or may not have wanted?
A creature, that's rough.
Because, like, I mean, to some women, like, you know, and it doesn't, a lot of people, like, consider, you know, when it gets to be a threat to the mother's life, they think about it like she's, like, it's giving birth, like it is a baby at this point, like delivery is a threat to, no, some women, like, getting pregnant, like conception of a child can be a threat to your life. So at that why are you taking away a woman's right to choose her own life over something that she doesn't have any kind of emotional connection to? Like, this is literally just a threat to my life, and you're taking away my choice to save my own life. Like, why is that a choice that the government is making? You get what I'm...
Well, right. I see what you mean. But again, let me kind of... There's a lot to unpack there because it is a very complex issue, right? So let me start with the first question I have, which, do you believe, in short, that there is a point where abortion becomes less moral than it was before? And more specifically, do you think, like, up to 9 months, a woman can decide that if she doesn't want to have the kid in the last second that she can abort the baby? What are your thoughts on that?
Okay. So I believe that, again, as a young woman.
As a young woman,
I believe that your decision. Okay, let me restart. I think, so your first question was, you said, do I believe that abortion is less moral now than it was before? And
no, like, is there a point at the pregnancy where it becomes not okay anymore is what I'm asking. Okay.
Yes. I do believe that once the child has, like, I'm not sure. I honestly cannot. No, they definitely do start to develop a conscience. At some point, the fetus, because it's not technically a child or a baby until it's delivered. So we have to.
Okay.
So at some point, the fetus develops a consciousness.
You know? Okay.
Like that's when it's kicking and, you know.
So you would say life begins at consciousness.
Yeah.
Okay.
Say that. And I'm not sure when. Like, you know, like month.
Right. No, that's No, we don't have to get too technical. We're just kind of talking the philosophy of it. So
if conscious, when I think life starts at consciousness, and at that point, I don't think any woman has gotten to that point and not.
No, I don't think so either.
And gotten to that point and not had a firm decision on what they wanted to do. Now.
Right. Yeah. No, I agree.
Right. So, like, if you realize, you know, at this point. You want to have this. So if you get to that point of consciousness and you're like, you know what, I'm just not ready to be a mother. Aborting the baby is not cool. Just put it in. Just like, honestly, you could
adoption.
Yeah. Adoption. Options. Adoption. As a woman, there are so many women in the world that want nothing more than a baby. And it's like, you can provide that for somebody. But it, okay. You know what I mean? So I definitely,
I think we agree there. Yeah. We agree there for sure. I want to keep exploring this a little.
Okay.
So consciousness, this is just kind of playing devil's advocate here. Mm-hmm. So let's say a person goes into a coma, hypothetically, mm-hmm. not a pregnant woman, right? Just a person somewhere in their life goes into a coma and is unconscious and it's undetermined when that person's going to wake up. Mm-hmm. Should we be able to kill that person because maybe they're costing too much on life support? What would you say to that?
I think that decision needs to be made by the people that know that person the most.
Like the family member, the dependents or something?
Yeah,
or?
Like not necessarily a family member because
oh yeah, no, I
be specific to family because, you know, family people can be greedy. Like, so I think it just needs to be like,
or abusive.
Yes,
right,
exactly. Yeah. So it needs to, so like, you know, if it's a trans person that is, you know, extradited from their family, but, you know, if they have really close friends and the person that knows them the most, that would be able to make the most accurate decision about what they would want. Because essentially, you're guessing. I already told my sister a long time ago, don't let me be a vegetable.
Yeah, you know, like, I got
5 years. If I'm not out in 5 years, throw a hell of a party, bro, and throw me in a lake. I'm straight. Like,
the 5 year rule. All right, that's fair. Yeah,
But I think the next of kin, well, I guess that implies family, but the most, like, the
right, but you determine person. The next of kin normally. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So fair. Okay. Interesting. I haven't really thought about that. It's just something I heard one time in an abortion debate, and I was curious, like, to kind of just play that.
And so if I can kind of tie the abortion back to what we were saying earlier, about how we should, you know, reduce the generalization of the government and, you know, bring it down to, like, kind of state or local decisions. Mm-hmm. If you had a situation where, like, in a state you had a government that was, you know, based off of, like, elected people, because like we said, abortion is a very specific, controversial thing. Like, you have to look at it from multiple different perspectives.
There's a lot of gray areas.
Right. There's a lot of gray areas. So you have to be very specific when you're dealing with it. Right. So I think if you could create a government that was, like, specific to each kind of thing like that, but not necessarily that specific. So, like, if you had a government that was, or a branch of a government, you know, like, statewide, that was comprised of women that were, you know, and their job is to make laws for women, like laws that have to do with, like, sex work and human trafficking, or like in that way, or you know, the like taxes on, like, luxury taxes. Do you know, Caleb, that there is a tax on sanitary items? That is the dumbest thing Caleb, and they like.
Well, trust me, Camille. We can get into taxes if you want. My basis of my position is that all taxation is completely theft and extortion. And I was actually going to bring it up later, but I agree. Please continue.
I think we might disagree a little bit on taxes. However,
let's save that one for after we've kind of finished this.
Things like that. If you could create a government that was more, I agree. I definitely agree that I think local states need local governments need to have more power, but I don't think that we should completely get rid of the federal.
Well, right.
Because so then you the have whole, like uh-huh. when you have states that have like a majority, like when you have states that have like a large, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Bias towards one thing. You know that, and then that the state decides they want to do something that's
right. Wild, well, in theory, you know? I don't have an issue with that so long as the state is abiding by the Constitution, because the purpose of having the union of 50 states is that the states are supposed to have freedom to move around with things that are not specifically defined in the Constitution. Now, when they step outside of that, they're breaking constitutional law, and the Supreme Court tells them no. So a good example of recently is many of these Democratic governors that decided to lock down their states when COVID hit. I know specifically Michigan and New Jersey, and I'm pretty sure more, but I haven't really checked recently. The courts came out and said, you cannot do that. It is unconstitutional and not within your powers. So that'd be an example of them doing something poorly outside of their power and being held accountable. Another example would be like Kentucky or Wyoming, one of the two, was like, we are going to be a constitutional carry state, meaning they are going to take the law, the Second Amendment, and that is the law of the state. So therefore, there were no gun laws unless you were a convicted felon, I'm pretty sure. So it was, you know, that was them acting within the Constitution using their discretion. Going back to the abortion thing, I don't see it as an issue that government can accurately cover all the loopholes and all of the different complications for, which is why the basis of my position is I would like us as a society to do something about it and not get the government involved, because anytime the government, whether it be right or left, tries to make laws one way or the other, there's going to be examples of fraud or abuse or things that just cannot be accounted for because of how complicated the topic is. You know what I mean? So now I wanted to say this earlier, and I just kind of want to hear your thoughts on it. So the concept, right, you said, why would a man or somebody that isn't a woman have something to say about a woman getting an abortion? I'm paraphrasing. I know that's not exactly what you said, right? So now let's kind of apply that logic. How would you feel in that sense if they used somebody in the South during the Civil War or pre-Civil War was trying to use the same argument against the North who didn't have slaves in protection of slave owners having rights to own slaves? What are your thoughts on that? Now, obviously, it's two different situations, but please.
Well, because – right. So, you know, so that's like why is someone making a decision for someone about something that doesn't have anything to do with it, right? Well, it's right. Because, in that situation, you know, you are the thing that you are arguing over is the ownership of human beings. That's kind of,
is it not?
That's right. Kind of different than me, you know, wanting to do with my personal body. And it's not.
But isn't a pregnant woman the owner of another human life to an extent, at least from the perspective of somebody who's pro-life? I'm not saying I agree with it necessarily. I'm just kind of playing the thought experiment. Yeah.
Okay. So you said is a woman, a pregnant woman.
And technically speaking, from the perspective of somebody that's pro-life that would argue this position, would be saying that a pregnant woman isn't not necessarily an owner, but is responsible for the life that is forming inside of her. Regardless of how we came to here, right? Regardless of that, she is kind of the big determining factor in whether or not this baby can be born or not. And so the argument is the parallel that says, you know, why can why is it wrong to speak out against slavery when you believe it's immoral, which it is, obviously, but wrong for someone who's pro-life to speak out against abortion? Like I said, it's kind of a straw man argument. There are two very different complex issues, but I was just curious to get your thoughts on it.
That's an interesting parallel that I've never really thought about before. However, I don't think it's enough of a parallel to like really exist. If that, like, how people can kind of say that, like, you know, like a woman is the owner of the baby, but it's like, it's not as if she's, you know, like,
there's obvious differences, right? Like, so obviously, like, slaves didn't consent to be enslaved.
It is the thing that makes it unrealistic parallel. That's what I should say. The thing that makes it unrealistic is the horrors of slavery. Now, if it was like something, if slavery had just been similar to like indentured servitude, where you just, you know, they weren't boiling people's bodies, you know, if that didn't happen and it was just, you know, you wake up, you know, work your 9 to 5 and go back, then I guess I can see how it would be a similar parallel. But it's like,
well, it's interesting you say that. Let me offer some perspective. I was actually reading a book called The Renegade History of the United States, which a specific portion of one of the chapters is talking about. There were indeed slaves that they interviewed in like the 1920s, former slaves, that they said preferred being slaves to working as freemen in the South, because when they were slaves, you know, they were taken care of. This was just something they were saying. They were taken care of, they were well fed, and they didn't really have to work that hard. Versus when they became free, that they didn't like is that they had to work a lot harder, otherwise they were going to lose their job and they lost the comforts. Now, again, that obviously everything you brought up is accurate too. There's horrors of slavery. It was a horrific system. On its face, it's evil because you have ownership of another human being. But I just wanted – it was just an interesting point that you brought that up, because I was just reading about it. I don't think it's a great parallel either. I'll be honest with you. I just think it's an interesting thought experiment to get people thinking about the base of the issue, which is there are some issues that are worth calling out if you have a set of morals that you believe that someone else is violating them in conflict. Because let's say, for instance, and this is, again, a ridiculous hypothetical, but it's to illustrate the point. If somewhere in the country people were going around and murdering trans people, let's say, saying that doesn't happen, but they were specifically murdering trans people, and the basis of their position was trans people don't have a right to exist. Now, I'm against murder, and I define that as fitting the qualifications for murder, because in my view, you know, they're still people regardless of whatever sexual preference or identity that they have. So that's, I'm calling that out as wrong. And from the perspective of someone who is pro-life, I can be sympathetic to, they are not comfortable with somebody else doing something that they view as murder. Now, then again, where I disagree is, like I said, there's a lot of complications in the middle where, you know, there are just so many variables at play, where that's where I just come to my basis, where I say that I don't think the government is capable of handling it. And if we want to change it, there's a lot of things we can do. We can get over-the-counter, you know, birth control. We can fix sex education. We can increase the efficiency and the safety of the adoption services. And those would all help the situation. But that's where I'm kind of like, when it comes to abortion, like I said, I don't really – sometimes I lean pro-choice, pro-life. It really depends on who I'm talking to. So if I was talking to somebody that was really pro-life right now, I'd be kind of giving your counter arguments to kind of make them see both sides of it, because I think I am somewhere on the middle, you know?
So what I don't understand about people who are like pro-life, and I've never – like I really have never understood this. Like I've always been so confused about it. So it's like – sure. If so in this scenario, you know, a teenage girl who is raped and she is impregnated by that, what is, like, what you do you really expect this girl who was attacked. And not only was she attacked, but there is now a living thing that is a direct result of that attack growing inside of her. Her brain is a tumor.
No,
like it is a parasite.
Right. Well, they didn't consent, right? Obviously. So that they didn't consent. So therefore, at that point, I'm sure there are like 100% fundamentalists, like pro-choice people, or excuse me, pro-life people that make the argument that it's still life and should be protected. I don't agree with that. I also know that there's a lot of pro-life people that say, no, absolutely. That like they're pro, some people say they're pro-life with exceptions, and rape, despite it being a rare happening in the statistics of how many abortions happen a year, that is one where they'll say, obviously the woman didn't consent, therefore she shouldn't have the kid. Now then again, it becomes tricky, right? Because if we were to pass a law that says, okay, abortions for rape are okay, but otherwise they're not, well, how many women are going to turn around that don't want kids and just say they were raped, therefore increasing the false accusations? And it's just such a complicated issue. But I think we've talked a lot about it, and we are coming up on time. So I wanted to move on just a couple more quick issues. And don't get me wrong, we should definitely do another one. But I want to go back to what you said. By the way, my wife is also studying to be a teacher, so I thought that was really cool. I didn't know that's what you were in school for.
Hold on. So I'm your wife.
Oh, you didn't know? That's right. We haven't caught up. Yeah. Do you live in Mary?
Okay. See, I was having a brain fart. I was like, do you know? I'm not sure if you also remember a girl we went to high school with. I think her name is like Caitlin Piccarello, I think. And I think she just got engaged, I believe. But her and Mary in my brain, I was getting their faces mixed up. So I was like, I don't know why. I was supposed to be like, Caitlin, but then no, Mary. Yes. I remember that. Oh, tell Mary I said, hey, girl. Tell Mary I said.
I will. I definitely will. And I think maybe if I'd want to cover these next few issues, but I was thinking maybe next time when we do one, we should talk on our thoughts on the education system, because I'm curious to see some of your ideas. But let's get on track here. So you mentioned something that I thought was really interesting that you said about, you know, if we outlaw abortion, it's just going to happen anyway illegally. Do you think that same thing applies to firearms and guns?
Yes, I believe so. Here's how I feel about firearms. I think we need stricter gun laws, simply because the gun laws we have now are not enough. The amount of school shootings that have happened since we started high school to now is absolutely atrocious. Children, here's how I feel about it. I think when I say stricter gun laws, I mean, I want more screening. I want it to be not necessarily more difficult, but more thorough with determining who is and isn't allowed to use a firearm, simply because we can't have people going around shooting up schools or shooting up concerts or gay clubs or Walmart.
Oh, agreed. Well, I agree that we don't want these shootings to happen, but let me just share a little bit on my perspective. Don't you think part of the issue is not that these people have guns, but rather that the places that they are attacking are unarmed? Because the light club that they attacked, again, no armed security in Orlando. All the schools, most of the time, don't have armed guards. In Florida, in Parkland happened 2017, right. I want to say, or maybe it was 2016. Again, there was an armed guard who refused to do his job. So even in the instances where we have armed security, sometimes they fail. The common denominator, let me just share my, I agree with you. A child getting murdered is the most awful thing that we could think of, maybe short of human trafficking and child trafficking. So it's an awful thing that we should do something about. But in my opinion, I don't know that the government is capable, again, of making the decisions properly without limiting the freedoms of law-abiding citizens in a way that would be counterproductive to stopping the issue.
So I think, again, so I say if we could implement, you know, again, so I guess it comes back to the, you know, the state and local thing. Like, obviously our government is just trash, but
you're on the right show, Cammie. You're right on the right show.
But so, you know, speaking hypothetically, what would be nice is if we could increase, you know, the process with which you have to go to get a gun, and then, you know, provide more people with the opportunity. Right.
Safety
exactly.
Training.
So it's like, if you, I mean, it's so like, let's say we did step A, and, you know, we still had X amount of school shootings because, you know, I mean, not school shootings, but, you know, X amount of mass shootings. Right. That's
mass shootings.
Sure. I'm so bad. I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, it's yeah. It makes sense, you know, because those are the ones that pop out. When you think mass shooting, you're not thinking of a gang shootout that happened in Chicago, as tragic as it is. You're thinking of unarmed kids because it's obviously a bit more graphic and,
but,
you know,
right.
Makes
so,
sense.
So, you know, let's say that they that did not decrease. So then at that point, you could start to, you know, start training people, like, you know, to become, you know, weapon efficient. I'm not sure.
Well, okay. So let me ask you this. Are you, have you ever purchased a firearm?
I have, well, I've never purchased a firearm. However, my family, my father has two.
We don't gotta get specific. Like, am I trying to wrap people out?
I have used a firearm before. I've been to the country.
Okay, good. Yeah, that's good. So do you think, I'm not sure, like, I hate saying the term gun culture, but, like, in my perspective, from the people that I've talked to, they're firearm owners. They are, by and large, a huge majority, incredibly responsible people that take it very seriously. And I agree with you with the sentiment. I do think responsibility is huge here. It's just, I think we may differ on where we want that responsibility coming from. Now, would a state government, in my opinion, be preferable to a federal? Absolutely, for reasons I enumerated earlier. But I think we're better off if we, one, obviously increase the punishments that we're serving for violent crimes and mass shootings. And two, I think the bigger thing is we should make these places that are getting attacked more defendable. After every school shooting, Firearm Owners of America and NRA offer their services to say, if you hire us, we can work with the state and local officials. We will have trained security professionals that know how to concealed carry on a school, hired as a janitor or as a hidden security guard, essentially. I'm not opposed to things like that. I'm also not opposed to, if a teacher has passed the background check, has taken a concealed carry class, from having a secure firearm within access in some type of safe in their classroom. What are your thoughts on something like that?
I personally, as someone that, you know, is going to be in the classroom at some point, have definitely had to think about, you know, if at some point I'm going to have to defend, you know, like, if that is, and I personally would, like, if I was at a school and they were like, would you want to do the gun training thing? Yeah, I would. I support it. I think as teachers, we are responsible for these children, and essentially in some ways more, like, we are more responsible for these children than their own parents. So,
I mean, at that time, you were their guardian.
If we are placed in a scenario where we need to defend them, I definitely agree that we should be able to defend ourselves. However, my main, like, I'm more concerned with reducing the, like, the opportunity to need to defend. And I think you are more concerned with increasing the ability to defend when the opportunity arises. So I think
I think that's true. And I think the basis of that for me is definitely just that criminals are going to break the law regardless of the laws that you pass. And my opinion and the basis of that is, like, okay, so let's accept that we can't accept, you know, what we can't change. And it's that psychopaths and murderers are going to commit it. If somebody decides to do something that heinous, there's no logical thing. There's something wrong with that person on a deep psychological level. And perhaps we can study that more and find out, like, what it is that really is the root cause of these things. But people have been studying serial killers for 50 years, and there still isn't a whole lot of conclusive evidence. I mean, there's some, but without getting too deep into that, my basis is just basically they're going to break the law no matter how many gun laws we pass. I would rather kill two birds with one stone, probably not the best phrase to use here, but just to say that let's protect our kids where we can protect them, and let's protect these high value areas where we can protect them. Also, while we do that, let's not infringe on people's rights to defend themselves if they obviously meet, you know, background checks and safety training and everything else. And because the thing for me is the Second Amendment's not just about having guns to protect yourself. It is fundamental that you have firearms to protect your own life, because if we believe in personal freedom, your freedom comes down to being able to protect ownership of your personal property, which at a basic level is you. Right. You own your life. And if somebody wants to, you know, assault you or kill you or try to attack you, you should have a right to defend yourself. Now, with that, it's like there's the other part of the Second Amendment, that we have them in ever the event that government gets a little bit too frisky for its own good and is going around violating people's freedoms. So that way we can avoid things like Nazi Germany or Stalinist Russia or things like that from happening here, as we've kind of seen in 2020, right? Mm-hmm. Where we've had cops, you know, breaking their oaths and killing people in horrific ways. We've had, you know, mobs of people destroying people's private property and businesses and assaulting people that didn't have anything to do with it. And it's two sides of a very unfortunate situation. And it's in situations like that where I want people to be responsible. One, not put yourself in the situation if you can avoid it altogether, obviously, because the less lives we can lose, the better. But if someone ever is in that unfortunate situation, I want to make sure they're as capable of defending themselves safely and getting out of the situation as cleanly as possible.
And just to kind of touch on the riot, not the rioting, but like, well, some of it, I'll be honest, has been riots. Let's be, but, you know, just the civil unrest, I should say. I definitely do understand people's, like, you know, frustration and anger about the property damage. I get that. Like, I can see why in your head, and I'm not in you, not you specifically, but, you know, in some people's heads, like, it just seems like just senseless, you know, violence. And it's just like, I just have to raise the question. Like, I want you to really sit down and contemplate what has to have happened for all 50 states to be protesting at one time.
Like, and not just 50 states, the world, 100%.
The actual globe. Like, see, I understand that the response and reaction was, I mean, it was bad. Like, nobody is trying to say that it was, like, no one is trying to belittle the small business who's, you know, who got burned down.
There's people that are doing it, but I think the like heart of what you're saying, correct me if I'm wrong, is that you don't want these riots to be spun in a way that distracts, like, from the real issue and the root of the issue.
Angry. People, Caleb, I can't, Caleb, people are angry. And it's like,
oh, Camille, you are preaching to the choir. I've been so anti-police brutality ever since. I remember this was part of the thing, to go back to what you said when you asked me what kind of changed my mind, is I remember when Eric Garner was killed in New York, I'm thinking, this is disgusting. So, this is government violating personal liberty.
So, like, for a lot of young Black children, Trayvon Martin really shook a lot of them to their core, because he was either our age, an age that we were very excited to get to, an age of our older siblings, or the age of someone that we know personally. And he, like, his name still means so much to so many people. Just simply, do you know that George Zimmerman sells Skittles? Like,
George Zimmerman is a piece of shit. You don't need any convincing on that.
Like, that was such a very pivotal moment in American history for so many people. Because if you really think about it, there's no reason why that man should not be in jail right now. You listen to the phone call, Caleb. There's no reason. There's no reason. And it's like,
okay, yeah. Let's concede that I'll be honest with you. I'm not as informed on the Martin Zimmerman case. I know little bits and pieces, but not enough to speak on it with comfort. I'll concede to you at this point that you are right. I'm sure that, you know, he probably got off on a crime he shouldn't have, which happens. But I think that from my perspective, the key of the issue here, and I've talked about this on previous podcasts, I think race obviously is an element in cases like that, sure. But what's happening with the instances of police brutality, it goes a lot deeper than just race. Because if we look at statistically, which is kind of, it kind of gets twisted the wrong way, is that white people, by volume, are killed more by police annually. Now, granted, proportionally, minorities are killed more and are 20% more likely to be killed because of in proportionality. So it's not as if, you know, everyone's getting killed the same rate. It's just that
he killed.
My point when I, well, yeah, the point when I bring that up is not to reduce it or make a reductionist argument. But that point when I bring these things up is to say, we should be in this together. The common threat to us, and I think racism is its own issue, and we can talk about that. But the common issue here is that the lawmakers have passed laws that have allowed abusive people to get into power and enforce laws that shouldn't be enforced in the first place. If drugs weren't illegal, Breonna Taylor would be alive today. If we didn't have such a piece of shit system with our Federal Reserve and the just action and currency and everything that goes on with that, George Floyd would still be alive today. If we had accountability and qualified immunity was at least reformed, if not done away with, Derek Chauvin wouldn't even be on the force. He had multiple threats against him and complaints against him. If these gun laws were reformed in a way that were actually sensible, we wouldn't have what happened to Duncan Lemp in Maryland. And you're probably not familiar with him, but regardless, that one hits me more personally. The point being to me is I think the common threat is we have lawmakers creating laws that wind up, even with the best of intentions, having adverse consequences, being carried out by police officers who sometimes are bad and other times are just wrong place, wrong time. And it creates the situation that we could avoid altogether if we make some sensible reforms and come together. And I'm with you. People are angry, and they should be. It's awful when any family member loses a member, you know, a child or a brother or a sister or a mother because of senseless violence over things that shouldn't have been a problem in the first place. We look at what happened to Breonna. She was living it. She was in her own bed asleep. She barely even knew the guy who apparently was already in custody.
Oh, so,
and we can I think we're on the same
Caleb,
page.
There's
on
so
these.
Many just, and it's I'll tell you what it is, because it's really just like it's a very very very, it is probably the biggest pill to swallow as a Black American, because 2020 has really opened the world's eyes to the fact that America and almost every system in it is biased towards Black people. And
can you elaborate with specifics for me? Because I just want to make sure we're talking about the same thing.
I'm talking about in almost every system that I can think of, Black people face some kind of tribulation, some kind of hardship, or that does not exist or is less so for other people. Let me explain. Do you know what the school to prison pipeline is? Has anyone ever like explained that to you in? Okay.
Oh, well, 100%. And that's a disgusting thing in of itself, but that speaks again to my perspective that government is creating atrocious laws between the
right. The school to prison pipeline.
Please go on.
That's something that a lot of people think about, right? Like that's one like blatant ass example. You know, teachers base their students' test scores. Teachers use their students' test scores to determine whether or not the child will succeed in school, and that determines how much effort they put into their teaching of that child. And obviously, if the child doesn't get as much effort, they're more likely to drop out. The more likely they are to drop out, the more likely they are to go to prison, i.e. the school to prison pipeline. Another example is in the medical system. Do you know that there was a study that shows that like 80% of white nurses assume that Black people have a higher pain tolerance than other races. A higher pain tolerance. Do you know that Black women are like 5 times more likely to die during pregnancy than any other race?
Why is that? Is that just because of the bias of pain tolerance?
It is partially because we are not a priority to them. There have been so many cases where women have literally been bleeding out and husbands have been begging and pleading for someone to come help my wife. Please, she's shaking. She's bleeding. She has not stopped bleeding. Like, I've seen videos, read articles, all kind of stuff. And the healthcare professionals are just not occupied. They just don't care. They have other things that are important to them. And then when they finally do come around, it's like, oh, I'm sorry. It is neglect. It is because we are not a priority to them. And then so you add the fact that they already think that we can take more pain than normal, or on top of the fact they might be operating with some kind of, you know, bias in assuming that we may or may not be able to pay for kinds of things. Like, there have been some hospitals that have refused to like help patients until they had proof of insurance because they didn't want to provide services to Black people who couldn't pay for it. That's the type of bias that we have to do with in the medical field.
So we agree, I think, that there are instances of biases that exist disproportionately against minorities than whites. I agree with you there.
So I'm sorry. So go on. Another. Oh God.
Please, yeah, no. I don't want to cut you off. I just wanted to redirect it because I just wanted to be. I think that everything we're saying is coming off as we're ranting and we're agreeing, and that's healthy. But we are coming up on time, so I wanted to just kind of cap this one. And don't get me wrong. Totally great convo. We should keep this going. Yeah. I can bring you back next week. But let's talk real quickly on solutions. Where do you think... So for me, I'll share mine and then I'd like you to share yours. The top 3 things that come to mind when I think things that would improve dramatically, not just the lives of, you know, minorities in America, but just the life quality in America. I think that the legalization and the decriminalization of drugs from across the board... it would be a huge step in the right direction because it would get rid of this drug war, which disproportionately affects minorities. It would obviously put a dent in the whole school-to-prison pipeline thing that we talked about because, you know, if drugs aren't illegal, then that's one less activity you can throw someone in prison for. Now, obviously, we can get into more of the specifics because, you know, I don't believe that people should do heroin. But that being said, I don't think they should be put in a cage for doing it either.
If you want your arm to fall off, go ahead.
Exactly. Like, if somebody's doing something to their own bodies, because you, again, as an American, as a person, you own your own body. I don't see how the government gets a say in what you do with that. And, you know, as long as you're not hurting somebody, you know, it's obviously different. Like, we're allowed to freely consume alcohol in this country. Right. So why can't I maybe smoke a joint, maybe do whatever other drugs, as long as I'm not hurting somebody? Then, you know, once I take alcohol, I get behind a wheel, the punishments that I feel are a lot worse. And I agree that principle should be applied with drugs. If you are a capable meth addict that once a week smokes meth to just deal with stress, go for it. Take the risks. It's your life. But again, there's benefits to legality. But before we get too off track, I think the legality and that the bare minimum, the decriminalization of drugs would be a huge step in the right direction in helping Americans. I think that reforming, if not getting rid of qualified immunity altogether, would definitely help with the accountability problem that we have with many police officers and elected officials. And then to sum it up, I guess as a top 3 in regards to this specific issue, I think another thing that we could do that would dramatically help in these situations is reduce taxes at a bare minimum on the lower half of the country, if not altogether, so that those people that need the money more have more money and are capable of using it to invest in whatever it is they see fit. And we can go into a whole list of other things with like education reform and whatnot, but that's just kind of like the first 3 things that come to mind for me. What about you?
It's really just 2 things that kind of popped into mind for me. And they're not necessarily like specific things. Like you said, like something very specific, like, you know, the, like getting rid of qualified immunity. That's a very specific thing that we can do. For me, my brain kind of just took it as some more like general, I guess. And so the two things that I need, is the first thing is education wise. And I mean that in the sense that too many people don't know what is going on. Like, or claim ignorance.
We need,
you know what I mean? So it's
No, I have determined that the next podcast we do is going to start off on education, because there's a lot we can talk about.
Cuz when I say education, me as an educator, like as a teacher, I mean like in the school, like actually like academically, but I also mean just like alleviating ignorance. Like I'm just going to put this information in your face. And then what you do with it will determine how I move around you from that point on. So my main goal is I call myself a young, oh God, I'm sorry. That just really hurt my heart. Woo. I'm sorry. Side note, I had a who broke up with me, but he used to call me the little activist, and it kind of just made me sad. But anywho, I like to call myself a young activist. And my goal as a young activist is just to educate people on why people are feeling the way they feel, why people are acting and saying this way. And so that's really just what I want. I want to educate people on the past and how we got to this point. I want to educate people on what's going on right now and why this way.
Okay, okay. So your big one, your first thing, we'll generally summarize. The
second one is definitely just accountability. I need... Both police, politicians, regular citizens, you know, there's no reason why, you know, people can just, I've seen a video on Facebook where like some people really tried to it was an attempted murder. Essentially, like they beat him up and like were about to try to lynch him, but then some people came and like saved him. It was on Facebook, but it's like, and nothing happened.
Okay.
Like the police officers came and said, well, because you're not hurt now and it happened a while ago and those people are gone, there's not really anything we can do about it. And it's like people aren't being held accountable. And it's like also on the same side, I would be held accountable for racism. If you're racist, I want you to be called out.
Like what?
Because it's not okay. It's not okay for you to be racist. And I'm tired. And I would like for people to stop trying to make it okay. Like stop trying to live with racism, stop trying to morph around it, you know. But that's really just those for me.
So so let me just say on this, because I don't think I'd necessarily disagree, but maybe we have a different approach. Because the thing about racism to me is, if you try to call it out and combat it and, you know, make this whole campaign to, you know, end racism, to my perspective, what you're doing is you're giving the racists a ground, an extra leg to stand on to say, oh, look, we obviously have enemies. We have legitimacy. Versus me, like when someone tells me anything that's racist, I just kind of laugh them off and dismiss them as ridiculous. And maybe it's just something that we need to think about. But in my view, if we're talking about, you know, getting rid of racism, every generation, you know, we can look at has gotten progressively less racist on a personal level. I think you and me would agree that we are a lot less racist than maybe even some of our parents or grandparents or even people just 10 years older. And I think it's just a thing that comes with time. My thing is, if we go down a path where we try to say we have to eradicate racism from our society, we're only emboldening the position and kind of forcing people to pick a side. And, you know, there might be some people that aren't really racist, but also might be closer on the spectrum to a racist than they are a non-racist, so to speak, if we're speaking very generally. So my thing is, I just always think about we should laugh them out of the room rather than
agree that like if we were to like go at them crazy and everything, it definitely gives them a leg to stand on. So for me, when I encounter a racist person, and thankfully I've never really encountered one too like blatantly, but I genuinely, like, if I ever did encounter a racist person, I would approach them like I approach most things that I just genuinely don't understand. Explain it to me. Like,
And when they do, though, it's funny.
Which is exactly my point of being held accountable. Like, I want you to explain to me why you feel this way. And then in your explanation, you will realize that there is no explanation. And then at that point, you just have to either be like, okay, well, I'm just going to choose this way to just be ignorant and malicious because there is no logic behind your standpoint. Or I can then at that point, you know,
yeah,
okay, well, damn, I've been feeling this way and there's no real reason I'm feeling this way. Okay, let me try to fix myself. Like, my point is to try to get you to
see it. Hey, yeah. If you want to take on that campaign, Camille, please do. Like, that's, I love your energy. I'm feeling it. My thing is, like, I'm more concerned with one, we're going to have different perspectives just because different lives, different, right, you know, race, upbringing, all that. My thing is just like, yeah, no, racism's a problem. And I think, like, there's degrees on how much of a problem it is. Like, obviously, if there's racism, yeah, in government, that's a lot more of a problem. And that's something we have to do something about because these people are supposed to be accountable to us. We're supposed to be their bosses. We should address that. When you compare that to, say, like, somebody posted something racist on their Facebook group or page or shared some meme that was, you know, out of taste or whatever, to me, that is a lot less of an important issue than, you know, so it's just a matter of picking and choosing your battles for me. And my battle is we have it within our power to hold government accountable because that's the whole purpose of why we have the system we have. So I think we start there. And I think if we start there, it kind of has this translation effect across the board. And if you, yeah, person to person conversation, like if you, there's a guy I heard about on the Joe Rogan podcast who, like, he made it his mission to talk to people in the KKK and convince them to basically hang up their robe and say, you know, there's no reason for me to feel this way. And he's converted like some crazy number, like in possibly in the hundreds, maybe less of people, yeah, from, and you know what? Good. Let's do that too. But yeah, mm-hmm. I think, so we've talked about a lot,
right?
We could definitely keep going, but for the sake of my audience and the sake of our personal time, right, I say we go ahead and we stop here. I have some notes on where I would like us to go next time, but before we leave, is there anything else that you would like to say as far as closing remarks, any social media or something that you would like to let the audience know about?
No, I am honestly, I am just thankful for the opportunity to come and, you know, just hopefully shed some light on how a lot of people like me are feeling. And I thank you for, you know, having me, and I'm excited to come back again.
Awesome, Camille. Thank you so much for coming. You were a great guest. I love talking to people of different perspectives. It's a big part of why I even started the show. And I definitely look forward to our next conversation
because
there's a lot to unpack that we didn't even get to. Like I said, just thank you so much for coming. It's been terrific. Pleasure having you. And to the audience, thank you guys so much if you made it this far for listening. And, you know, if you like what you heard, please go ahead and send me some questions. Send me some feedback. I'm on Twitter at Zoomers for Liberty or on YouTube at also Zoomers for Liberty. Please feel free to subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform that you're listening to. And we look forward to getting you some more episodes this week.